It's got a death curse.
Don't bother me, be like me. And then who will lock you up in a sewer?
Just like having a wart removed.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Okay. Hello and welcome to the podcast of Horror 101, where we are educating your fears. I'm Cash Wampum. I'm your host. Let me give you a bit of a background here. I've been a horror fan for 25 years now. I've seen a lot of horror. I'm not going to say I've seen it all, because that would be impossible, especially these days where straight-to-video horror are a dime a dozen. I just cannot see everything, but back, I would say, around 1990, I could honestly say that I had seen almost everything. Back before the internet was very popular and high speed was introduced, I had to find bootlegs of movies that you would never be able to rent around where I'm at in Windsor, Ontario, which is just across from Detroit, Michigan. We're Canadian here. I was 17 when I first got my hands on the original I Spit on Your Grave. I'd seen things like Last House on the Left, All the Nightmare on Elm Streets, Friday the 13th, Hellraiser, Halloween's, Phantasms, you name it. But some of them eluded me. I had always heard of these movies that I had to get my hands on, but were hard to find. Little backstory on me. I'm 35. Before the age of 10, everything scared me. I was a scaredy cat. One of the scariest things that I've ever seen. I'll share this story with you. I was 5 years old. It was Boxing Day, and that's the day after Christmas here in Canada. And we had gathered together, the family had gathered together at my aunt and uncle's place. And most of the family had sit down to watch this brand new movie. It had just come out on VHS called Raiders of the Lost Ark. And it was 1981. My grandfather, my late grandfather, had bought this movie on VHS for $121. $121 just for this movie. And what had happened was, as I was playing around and I come around the corner, just as Omar Toth's face was melting off at the end when the Ark goes nuts. And the scene was taken by me, this five-year-old kid, completely out of context. I had no idea what was going on. All I knew was I come around the corner, and here's this guy in this black hat. His eyes roll into the back of his head. His face melts off, and you can hear him gargling on his own flesh. This the scariest thing I had ever seen. And what had happened was, as Raiders of the Lost Ark became and still is my favorite movie in the world, even though it's not horror, it's my absolute favorite movie in the world. It's what I would suggest is a perfect movie. And for the next 4 years, I would ask my grandfather to play that movie for me at least 80 or 90 times. However, up until I was 10 years old, when the scene came that the ark was open and the power of God came out, the ghosts or angels or what have you would fly around, I knew it was time to leave. I just couldn't handle seeing that scene again because I knew that's where it was. So for years, I would sit in the hallway and listen to all these people screaming as the ark destroyed them. And then when the scene was done and everything calmed down, I would kind of walk back into the room and watch the rest of the movie. It went on like that for years. So when I was about 10, I had the house to myself, I forget for what reason, for a couple of hours, and I threw in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Another scene in the movie that really kind of fucked with me was when they were in the Well of Souls and Marion gets accosted by all those mummies. And she turns to the one, and the mummy's got this huge boa constrictor, a python, crawling out of its mouth. That imagery fucked me up as well. So I watched through that And I'm like, okay, if you can get through that, you can get through Toad's face melting off at the end of the movie. So the end came, and the arc was open, and I willed myself to sit there and watch the rest of it and not flee. And the scene came, and my adrenaline was going. Like, to me, it was like I was on a roller coaster that was doomed to fail. And the scene came and watched his face melt off, and it was just as terrifying as I had remembered it. But when it was all said and done, I was still sitting there and I was still watching the movie. I had overcome the fear. I enjoyed the adrenaline rush that it gave me. And I, from that moment on, I was a horror movie junkie because I wanted to find other things that would give me the same sensation. So we will thank Raiders of the Lost Ark, good old Ronald Lacey, who scared the shit out of me back when I was 5 years old and turned me into a horror movie junkie.
Hey, you want to see something really scary?
You bet.
Really?
Yeah.
My goal for this show, for this podcast, is to get some of my friends together and talk about some good horror, make some good points, debate, argue. I'm sure that's going to come into it. And bring you in. I'd love for that to happen. I love discussing horror. I love talking about how they were made. The good ones. New. Old. Really old. I just love discussing horror. I want to bring you into the fold. Because I'm hoping that it's a wild ride. I guarantee you we're going to have a lot of spoilers to movies that you should have already seen. If you haven't, I apologize. We'll let you know in advance what we're going to be talking about. So if you haven't seen a movie that we press upon, you know, listen with care, please. We're going to be producing some videos, hopefully, very soon. We're going to, if not lampoon, but try to recreate some classic moments in horror. Hopefully you guys will check that out, too. Come check us out at horror101.ca. I hope you join the community. I hope to hear from you. I want to hear suggestions, critiques. If you hate me, let me know. If you love me, please, by all means, let me know. I'm not too sure how to start this off. I mean, we're going to do different shows. I'd like to talk about remakes, especially now the horror genre is just inundated with remakes. Most of them suck ass. Some of them are okay. But before a horror movie fan can really say that all remakes should be shot and pissed on, I'd like to take a moment to just remind them of things like John Carpenter's The Thing back in 1982. That was a remake of a movie made in the 50s. And if you ask anybody who's worth their salt in the horror community, The Thing is probably in their top 10. Another remake that I think is probably one of the best is Cronenberg's The Fly. David Cronenberg, Canadian director, probably well known for Videodrome and Scanners with Michael Ironside. He remade The Fly with Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis back in 1986. And if you haven't seen it, I really suggest you do because it really lives up to a lot of expectations. The effects in it are great. It's atmospheric. It's terrifying. It's just a really, really well done movie. So yeah, are remakes destroying the genre? I'm going to go ahead and say yes. But do they all suck? Absolutely not. And those are only two examples of movies that have been remade where the remake not only does it the original justice, but surpasses it 1,000%.
Somebody in this camp ain't what he appears to be. Right now, that may be one or two of us. By spring, it could be all of us.
Okay. Brian Stewart, you're not a horror fan.
I'm a film fan, film buff.
You're a cinephile.
That's it. I watch everything.
I have to ask you, where do you find the time to watch all the shit you have? Because you've seen, like, tons of TV, like, whole series of television shows that I've never even heard of. Not to mention the things that are mainstream that everybody's heard of. You've seen movies that I've never heard of, and I've seen a lot of fucking movies. I got you on the horror front, but you where do you find all this time to watch this shit?
I'm an idol, first and foremost. And when I worked at UPS, I would only work 6-7 hours a night, which is not a full day. And I'd get home around 9 o'clock at night, and I would start movie watching around 10 o'clock, and I'd be up until about 4 in the morning, and I would just watch back-to-back movies. Yeah, we used to have movie marathons when my buddies and I used to get together. We'd watch 3-4 movies in a night.
We used to do that when we were kids, stay up all night. We'd rent like 5-6 titles and just go back to back to back.
That's what we do.
But mainly it was horror movies. We used to, there was a place called in Windsor called Jumbo Video. Remember Jumbo?
I worked there.
Oh.
I worked the midnight shift at Jumbo Video for a year.
How is it that I could have, I never met you? Maybe I did and I don't remember.
Out of this end, did you go to the one at Pickwick or the one out at Dugan?
Pickwick.
That's where I worked. But the thing is, there were two midnight guys and we worked every other night because our bosses were dicks. So
I lived on Meadowbrook, 6211 Meadowbrook Lane.
Okay.
And we were there all the time.
You would have run into either me or my buddy Paul.
What is the scariest movie to you that you've ever seen? What's the movie that just like, even thinking about it, makes your blood kind of run cold? Everybody's got
one.
The
most frightening experience film would probably be, that's a tough one, probably Rear Window. And I'll tell you, that was the first time ever I felt engaged in a movie, like I was part of the film. And I was,
again, it's Hitchcock, but Hitchcock doesn't make horror.
Well, you said a movie that got to me and made me jump, made me frightened. When Jimmy Stewart is sitting there helpless in his apartment watching Grace Kelly break into the apartment across the way when the killer returns, and there's nothing he can do. That is just pure suspense. Now, if you're talking about like pure gore, like Shock Valley, something that has really resonated and shocked the hell out of me, then, I mean, the field's wide open there. I mean, there are a lot of films that, like the Evil Dead movies, when I was a kid, scared the crap out of me. I was haunted. I used to have to check my bed because I used to have that space between my bed and the window, and I'd have to lean over and check to make sure there was nothing there before I went to sleep. You know, especially like the grandmother in the basement, the cellar.
Someone's in my fridge cellar! Someone with a fresh soul!
Evil Dead 2, then.
Yeah.
Do you know who played that grandmother?
I have no idea.
That was Ted Raimi. That was Sam Raimi's brother.
You know, it could have been anybody. It didn't matter because that was disturbing.
And I'll swallow your soul!
What's odd about Raimi, and this is something I thought was really kind of cool, is that he sugarcoats a lot of his horror in humor. So it's easy going down while you're watching, but I don't think it really hits you until after you walk out of the theater. That's when it really starts to resonate.
Evil Dead 2, excuse me, Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness are kind of like black comedies with a lot of gore. It's so over the top that you don't really take it seriously. You're entertained, but you're not really grossed out because you can't really take it seriously.
Yeah.
Whereas Evil Dead, if you watch Evil Dead takes itself seriously.
And it's filmed low budget. I think low budget seriousness will probably create the most frightening films, more so than any high budget modern day thriller.
And a good example of that is when I first saw The Evil Dead. Actually, I watched Evil Dead 2 before Evil Dead. But when I first saw Evil Dead, I rented it. It was on this VHS that had probably been watched 1,000 times. So by the time it reached my VCR, it looked so gritty and grainy. The color had been saturated out of it just by a bit. And it just looked like almost 8mm. I picked up recently like a THX high definition brushed up version of it, and it completely took away from the effect of the movie. You could see where the makeup ends on the deadites, and so you could completely tell, okay, that's an actor or an actress in makeup, because I can see where their real flesh begins and the makeup starts, and it took away from the effect. Whereas the old gritty VHS, you couldn't tell the difference. They actually look like real demons.
I have the same problem, too, when I watch television shows now that I have a high-def television, and I watch some of my favorite shows, go back and see them again, I feel like I'm watching a soap opera. They all look like I'm watching General Hospital, you know, because it's so vivid and so real, because they use those really crappy, you know, soap opera cameras where everything is just hyper-real. And I don't want it to be real, because I think there's a real disconnect there. It ruins suspension of disbelief. I mean, it feels like we're watching news footage or something.
I firmly believe that high def, like everything now is 1080p. We've got this 47-inch here. I got everything in high def. Newer movies, absolutely 1080p. If you want high def because it looks crisp, it looks really, really good. But movies that were shot in old 16mm and stuff like that should be watched like they were supposed to be.
It should never feel real because you want to be slightly disconnected from there because the characters on screen need to be larger than life. They do.
So Evil Dead 2, you'd say, would be your favorite horror movie?
Favorite horror film of all time is probably Legend of Hell House.
The Belasco House.
Hell House.
Hell House.
1973.
Yeah. With
Roddy McDowell.
John Howe directing. Clive Revel, Pamela Franklin. Great cast.
She played the young psychic, right?
That's right.
She was a dish back in her day.
Yeah.
She was also in, I haven't seen it, but I know she was in, it's either, I think it's called The Witches or The Witching Hour with Orson Welles.
See, what I liked about Hell House was that it was a horror film that worked because of truly exceptional acting. People who could make you feel those characters. There was no special effects budgets back then. They didn't have CGI. They didn't have anything to rely on. You had gusts of wind blowing cobwebs, and it was frightening because the characters made it feel real. You had actors. Nowadays, I don't like the reliance on modern-day effects or CGI. I hate it because I've never once seen anything CGI that my brain didn't immediately go, oh, it's computer-generated. Oh, it's fake.
I think CGI has kind of gone into the horror genre and it's taken a lot away from it because now, like, if they need a blood splatter or something, they just throw in some CGI blood and it doesn't look natural and it takes away from the effect.
Give me a Sam Peckinpah squib.
Give me Tom Savini circa 1980 with, like, Maniac or Friday the 13th or The Burning, or give me Steve Johnson circa 1986 with, like, Night of the Demons, where everything is tangible. It's GRU that was created for the scene.
Right.
Don't give me computer-animated blood splatter because I can recognize it right away. I mean, if they can perfect it, fine, but there's just, you can't replace gore with CGI and be effective. You can't do it.
For historical reasons, you want to see blood done really well. Go back and see Sam Peckinpah's The Wild Bunch. That was the first time in film history they ever used a double squib. Up until then, in Westerns or anything, if somebody got shot, they could have the squib in the front. They would show the gut wound, but bullets never got through. There was never any exit wounds in Hollywood in those days.
Yes.
You see in this movie, guys will get shot, fall against a wall, and then fall down, and you'll see the blood smear against the wall, and that shocked the hell out of people in those days. It actually looked viscerally real.
Well, if people like Tom Savini. Tom Savini was a photographer in Vietnam. He enlisted. He could kind of stay out of the front lines. Whenever shit went down, they'd send him in with his camera so he could take pictures and whatnot. This is kind of chronicle what's going on. And in that time, he saw and photographed a lot of bad shit. People that have been eviscerated, blown apart, body parts, gunshot wounds, like any possible trauma that you can possibly put on anybody, he had seen and photographed close up. And I think that's probably why his effects are so like, oh my God, you know what right. I mean? Because he knows exactly how your body should work when it's maimed in a certain way.
Extro. Some extraterrestrials aren't friendly. From New Line Cinema, rated R.
Back in like the 70s and the 80s, horror movies were geared towards adults. Adults should be watching horror movies, especially, you know, that's why it was rated R. Here in Canada, rated R means you can't see it if you're under 18, not like the American side, where if you're under 18, you can bring in a guardian or an adult with you.
Their kiss of death is NC-17.
Yes, which nothing ever is, and if it is, it's not going to reach the theaters. But over here in Canada, if it was R, when we were growing up, R meant you weren't seeing it in the theater unless you were at least 18. Doesn't matter who you brought with you.
The rules have changed so horribly. I mean, they let so much slide anymore. There is no line anymore.
Because they want 14, 13, 15, 16-year-old people, they want them buying tickets.
I mean, it used to be if you said the word fuck once, that was it. That was an R. Didn't matter what else happened in the rest of the movie, that was an R. One time.
In the States, yes. But over here, we had, if you remember when we were kids, we had AA-14.
Right.
AA-14 was our reprieve. When I was like 14, 15, 16, and 17, and I knew there was a horror movie coming out, I prayed to God. Well, actually, it was a double-edged sword, and let me explain. I prayed to God it was AA-14, that way I could see it at the theater without having to wait 9 months for it to hit VHS, because if that was the case, everything would be spoiled by the time I watched it. But I'd want it to be rated R, because if it was rated R, I knew that it would be intense and graphic.
Yeah, it would have to have something else besides language to be rated R over here. It would have to have language and, well, I don't even know what it would take these days.
Rape?
I
mean, well, actually, right now, the only thing that has been rated R recently here in Canada that I've noticed was Hobo with a Shotgun. And if you haven't seen Hobo with a Shotgun, it is graphic. I mean, it's uber graphic. It's hard to explain. It's violence for violence's sake.
Yeah, I wanted to see that movie just because they could have just titled it Rutger Hauer with a Shotgun, and I would have seen it.
Rutger Hauer has been one of my favorites ever since 1986.
He should have been Magneto in the X-Men movies. No offense to the Ian McKellen fans, but he was like genetically created to be Magneto. He would have been perfect.
Ever since The Hitcher, this is a true story. When I was a kid, I remember watching The Hitcher on channel. Remember Channel 21 cable? Like, first choice?
We used to have 22 on our cable pack.
Yeah, sorry, 22, but it was first choice. Yeah. I remember watching that, and it was rated R. I was, like, 11 years old, and I watched that movie with Rutger Hauer, and Rutger Hauer scared me through his performance of John Ryder. He was just this nutball that just, for some reason, went crazy and started killing everybody that he happened upon on the freeway. And just the way it was written, the way it was shot, and it's an HBO movie. If you look at it, it's like HBO movie, but it's so terrifying how crazy he is and how it was written. That solidified him as one of my favorites. So anything that has Rutger Hauer in it, I gotta watch
it. Of course, I like most people are gonna remember from Blade Runner.
Blade Runner, of course. Yes.
And those who haven't seen much of his recent work, go back and see George Clooney directed him in a movie called Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
George Clooney?
Yep.
As in From Dusk Till Dawn, George Clooney?
Absolutely. Yeah, Rutger Hauer, that is fantastic.
Have you seen The Hitcher?
Not yet. We should do that one next
week. Brian Stewart. The thing is that I can watch The Hitcher. A lot of movies, especially when I was growing up, a lot of my favorites, like, I can't tell you how many times I've seen, pick a Friday the 13th movie, and I guarantee you I've seen it at least 10 times.
Right.
You show me a picture of the mask, and I'll be able to tell you what part it was from. I watched a lot of movies over and over again because I loved them so much. The Hitcher, I can watch now maybe once every 3 or 4 years, because after 1,000 or 1,500 days, different things start becoming a little fuzzy to you, so that when you watch it, it's like, oh yeah, that's how it goes. You know, like there's certain scenes in it that I'll never forget. Like, and when it comes up, there's one scene in particular where Buddy's girlfriend, I hate to give spoilers, but at some point he wakes up and Rutger Hauer has his girlfriend tied to a trailer, like a truck trailer, and the other half of her tied to the truck. So she's like the meat between the truck trailer sandwich, eh? And he's got his foot on the clutch, and the cops are like, you got to go in there and talk to this guy, you know. And he's screaming at the cops, going, do something. And the cops are like, if we shoot him, his foot's going to come off that clutch, and that truck's going to roll, and we all know what that happens. Jennifer Jason Leigh's going to be snapped in half. And that scene is so terrifying, man. So terrifying. It's just like, oh my God, I can't believe that I'm watching that. Every time I watch this scene, I get shivers. It's really, really well done.
Why don't you do something? Fucking do something!
We can't! We shoot him, his foot is going to come off that clutch, and that truck is going to roll. Now you get in there. And you see what you can do.
A lot of people are saying that remakes these days are killing the genre because they're remaking everything. They remade Nightmare on Elm Street.
They're remaking Fright Night. Mark my words, it will not be good.
I don't even want to talk about that, man.
It looks terrible.
But they've remade Friday the 13th. They've remade A Nightmare on Elm Street. There's talks now of remaking Poltergeist.
There was a time when they went through and did like William Castle's entire catalog, because they did House on Haunted Hill. Then they did 13 Ghosts. That was one of his.
Yes.
And I, you know, they'll probably do. They did House of Wax, like all the old Vincent Price classics, and they're just butchering them.
Black Christmas was remade. Piranha. They want to remake Hellraiser. They want to remake.
Wicker Man was remade.
Yes, The Wicker Man, the new one with Nicolas Cage was a bomb. If they keep making them, as a horror fan, I will keep watching them. That doesn't mean that I'm going to enjoy them. Let me just say, I remember seeing the Nightmare on Elm Street in the theater, the remake, and I had really high hopes for it, even though I kind of knew in the back of my mind that it was going to suck compared to the original. It didn't have the atmosphere of the original. To me, Robert Englund is one of my horror heroes. I mean, he's been Freddy since 1983. How were they going to replace Fred Krueger with somebody else? Now, I didn't mind Jackie Earle Haley's presence. They showed snippets of Jackie Earle Haley or Fred Krueger before he was burned, working in a school, showing him playing with young children, and that knowing who Fred Krueger is and watching him playing with children that don't know that they're in danger but are, kind of, as a viewer, made me feel dread, because I'm like, you know, I wanted to tell these children, run, you know, get away from this guy.
You want to see a movie that shows dread over child endangerment, and it really stems back to the movie 1931, Fritz Lang, the first serial killer movie.
So I was appreciating the direction that the new Nightmare on Elm Street was trying to take. There's a scene in it where one kid's dead, but it flashes back to Freddy torturing him in his dream, and Freddy tells him, listen, you're dead, but after death, your brain continues to function for about 5-6 minutes.
We got 6 more minutes to play.
I thought that was an excellent addition, because there's probably some realism to that, that, yeah, the body is saying that he's dead, and there's no way he can be revived, but because of the whole cognitive process, right, Freddy still has a few more minutes to fuck with this kid, because the brain is still dreaming. They tried at some point to make the audience think that, what if Fred Krueger wasn't this child molester slash child killer? What if he was innocent and these children all pointed the finger at him, and before the truth could come out, the parents done him in, and that's why he's come back for revenge kind of deal. The only thing that took away from this whole point of view is the fact that in the movie, they show the children having claw marks on their back. Right. So there's evidence that this guy is up to no good, but they're still trying to play off like, what if? But you're already giving us evidence that it isn't that way. So it was a complete misnomer. It was a moot point. It didn't work. Take that element out, and maybe I would buy it. It didn't have the feeling of the original. That's what these new remakes have that the old ones, or excuse me, that's what the remakes don't have that the old ones had, was feeling, in-depth, environment, just good filmmaking.
Well, I think modern filmmaking relies less and less on character as an element of the film. And you know less about today's heroes. You know less about their family life or who they are, what makes them tick. They're basically just elements of convenience anymore. They're just there to string you from one CGI scene to the next.
Hello, Michael. I want to play a game.
I'm surprised they're not already remaking Saw when they've just concluded the whole saga. You know what I mean?
But for the record, Saw is the Riddler. I don't know why it's so original what Saw does. I've been watching the Riddler do the shit Saw's been doing for the past, you know, 60 years in DC Comics. But I will say that I like Saw. I thought it was a great movie. I thought the sequel was great. I thought the third movie was fantastic. And then after a while, I thought, dear God, when is this ever going to end? And it's not going to. They say it is. It's not going to.
Well,
somebody will carry on the torch. As long as people are willing to pay friggin' $11 to go see it, they'll keep making them.
I think Saw was a good thriller. Okay. When I first watched part two, I watched it on this TV here. And when I finally watched it, I beat myself for not seeing it in the theater when it first came out, because it was that good. Saw 2 was just very, very powerful. And I loved how it referenced Last House on the Left in it. Like, blatantly, he's like, yeah, it's over here, Last House on the Left. I'm like, oh my God, that's great. Saw 3 added another dimension. It was another good movie. Then Saw 4 kind of threw me for a loop.
Saw 3 introduced the idea of the disciple, didn't it?
Yes, it did. And then Saw 4 gave you another disciple. And by the end of Saw 4, I was given a lot of questions. You know, I was wondering, like, what the hell is going on? And then Saw 5 came out, and everybody was going, Saw 5 sucked. Saw 5 is the worst Saw movie ever. Even after 6 and 7, they still say that Saw 5 was the worst movie ever. And I walked out of Saw 5 going, thank Christ for this movie, because every question that I had after watching Saw 4, Saw 5 gave me the answer to. Every question. And I was able to put it together and say, okay, now I know. Whereas everybody was just like, oh, it's just another fucking sequel. It gave me closure on everything that Saw 4 gave me. And these movies, it has to give you more. It has to open up the book even more, or else it's going to become mundane and you're not going to enjoy it.
If you don't reveal more of the mystery, or if there's no character development and it becomes same old, it will make people angry.
Jesse, it's okay. It's all over.
Well, that's just about going to wrap up this first podcast for Horror 101. I want to thank my good friend Brian Stewart for coming and helping me out with this first show. Now, if you listen to this, whether you know me or not, and you thought to yourself, oh my God, did that ever sound like shit? I apologize. There's going to be some growing pains. We're going to have fun doing this, and hopefully it's going to get a lot better. Next time I'm going to come to you, probably within the next couple of weeks, I'd like to focus on Insidious. I don't know if you've seen that one yet or not, but it's a newish horror movie that I really like. We're also going to be focusing on elements that we feel make a really good horror movie. And the hidden gem that we're going to focus on next time will be Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. This is a movie that was lambasted by both fans and critics alike when it came out in 1982. I think it's a perfect B-movie. I think the only thing that happened was they slapped a Halloween title on it when there was no Michael Myers. Get the fuck over it. It's a great movie. We'll talk about that next time. And make sure you check us out at horror101.ca, where we're educating your fears. We're going to be putting up some movie reviews. I don't have a forum as of right now, but there's going to be, you know, it's a WordPress kind of setup where you can comment on pretty much anything that we post. So if you have a suggestion or anything like that, please post it and we'll get to it. Any questions, comments, we look forward to hearing from you, truly. This is Cash Wampum saying, I guarantee you that there's a movie out there that's going to scare the shit out of you. And we're going to find it on Horror 101.